Happy Thursday. It's the festive season, which is why we've made the Gab and Jules show look more festive, yeah. Jules. All right, we got football doesn't stop, so we have another big show for you. Milan and Lazio last night. We're going to be joined by Stuart Robson in a minute. We've got some League Cup stuff. Yeah. We have some Barcelona, some Real Madrid, some Inter Milan. And
some PSG breaking news.
And perhaps some PSG breaking news for TT. Yeah. But we'll get to all that. Let's start right at the top with Robbo. Milan, they're playing Lazio. They've been on this incredible run, of unbeaten run. It feels like a trap game because Lazio can be very, very dangerous, as they've shown. They go 2-0 down. Everything's fine. Everything's even better. You know, they do this without the starting midfield. No Bennacer, no Frank Kessie, no Kjær at the back, no Ibrahimovic up front. And then Lazio pegged them back to 2-2. And so I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, this is where the wheels come off. It's hard. But no, they keep going. They create even better chances. Mm. And they score a winner with Theo Hernandez. Robbo, what does this do to a team's confidence, especially young players, when they show that ability to come back in the face of adversity?
It does a lot for their confidence because, as you just mentioned, it looks as though the wheels were going to come off, having been 2-0 up and then pegged back. And they were outplayed. There's no question about it. Lazio were the better team for much of the game, and it looked as though Milan were hanging on. I think Inzaghi helped Milan because he made a couple of strange substitutions. But it does a great deal of benefit for their confidence going forward. It means that even when they play poorly, which they did last night for long periods of the game, they still know how to stay in a game. And they still had that little bit of energy at the end. I think going into the games after Christmas, this will build up their confidence. They're going into it thinking that they can go and win the title.
Theo Hernandez came good again. Man, remember when he scored against Parma to get a draw at the last minute again, and they're still unbeaten. And again, the goal last night. I mean, he's a left back, but a very attacking left back. But
he also defends too. He's a physical beast.
Robbo, have you been surprised? I mean, last season he was probably Milan's best player already with Ibra, and had a really good season. But maybe consistency was missing before when he was in Spain, for example. Are you surprised of the level that he's been playing at? And is he the best Hernandez right now in world football? And is he maybe the best left back in world football?
On recent performances, he's been absolutely outstanding. One of the best left backs in the world. I would say he's right up there at the moment. Last year, when I watched him, I'd always say how good he was going forward. You could guarantee that he'd get crosses in. He's got good pace going forward. I always questioned his quality defending. He got played around too easily. He didn't seem to have a good game understanding. But suddenly that's changed this season. There was a moment in the game last night when he got back against Lazzari, who was very, very quick. He got back, got into a good defensive position, dealt with it, and you thought, now this is a top-class defender. And then it wasn't just his header in the last minute. He got forward many, many times, got crosses in. He also delivered the cross where Rebic had the shot when Pepe Reina made the save just before he scored. So he still showed great energy towards the end of the game. He was still the fittest player on the field, I would say, not just for Milan, but also for Lazio. I thought he was outstanding, and he is one of the best left backs in the world. I can't think of too many that would do as good a job as he's doing at the moment.
Did you see the celebration? I think he's looking for the call from Deschamps, isn't he? He's waiting for the goal.
That's what it is. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you guys have a couple decent left backs in the mix, to be fair. Yeah. Robbo, I was struck by the fact, I mean, you said Lazio were the better team for much of the game. I'm not sure I'd quite go that far personally, but in the end, Lazio's goals, one comes off the Immobile penalty miss, which wouldn't have happened if Donnarumma hadn't spilled the ball before that to lead to the corner, which led to the penalty, which should never have been given as a penalty because that was a nonsense call. The other one, though, is Ciro Immobile's finish. That, if you haven't seen this, it's a tremendous pass from Milinkovic-Savic. Yeah. The ball is dropping out of the air, and he side-foots it with power. And I think you said in commentary that most players would have smashed it.
I think most players would have tried to go with their laces because what happened, when Milinkovic-Savic clips the ball over the top, it's not just up and down, there's a load of spin on the ball as well. And I think most players would go with it and try and hit it full with their laces and try and hit it with power because not too many players would have been able to make the right contact and got the timing of the ball, of the kick right. And he got it on the inside of his foot and he got enough power to take it past Donnarumma. Yes, Donnarumma got a touch to it. But I thought that was an expert finish, something that many strikers, and I would say, and I honestly say this, 8 times out of 10, players would have missed that chance. I think that was a brilliant goal from Immobile. Yes, a lovely pass, but he had to do a lot of work to get it into that bottom corner.
You know, last week on the FC show, I suggested that it was a four-way race for the title with the two Milan clubs, obviously Inter winning as well, yeah. Juventus and Napoli.
Now you're not sure now.
Well, no, I want to point out, all the Muppets laughed at me. Napoli, right? Yeah, you ain't laughing now, are you?
Well, Napoli drew with Torino, scoring at the last minute to get a point.
The Napoli, who's got a game in hand now against Juve, and we'll get to that later. Juve, by the way, losing. Roma up to third in Serie A. Robbo, it's wide open. I know you hate predictions, probably as much as I do. But I got to ask you. Well, let's all chip in, right? It's the holiday season. Who's your pick as of right now? And you're allowed to modify this because when facts change, opinions change.
Well, I watched both games last night. I was commentating on one and watched the other one beforehand. And I was impressed with the way Inter played. There was something about them. They got it into the front, but he changed the system slightly by playing Perisic and Martinez in behind Lukaku. They got their, particularly Hakimi played excellently down the right-hand side. I thought there was an energy about their defending. I thought they defended with determination. Handanovic made a mistake for the goal. But just looking at that Inter side last night, that's what I expected from Inter when Antonio Conte took over. And if they can continue to play that way,
that's exciting.
I think they will win the league.
All right, he says Inter. What's your choice?
No European competition.
Yeah, that's huge.
But still, that's huge. For me, I go Milan because I'm a romantic.
Would it be romantic? Hedge funds owning football club? No, I'm just kidding. It's kidding. That would be an absolutely tremendous story.
Who's your choice?
I am so much on the fence, but hey, I introduced this topic, so I'm going to stick with Napoli for another week, despite the points drop, because I think the players that are set to come back for Napoli can make more of a difference to them than the returning players for any other club in Serie A. But hey, any week, as I said, intelligent people, when facts change, opinions change. All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us. Robbo's still with us.
Yeah.
Let's delve into this a little more. Unfortunately, we've had to remove, and obviously if you listen to a podcast, you wouldn't know this, but I've had to remove my festive Santa hat.
Artifact.
Yeah, and Jules has had to remove his antlers, that little jingling. Those are festive Christmas bells, but our producer... See that? Yeah. Our producer, Freddie Grinch, made us remove them, so I apologize in advance for that, but... Let's talk a little more of Milan here. Hakan Çalhanoğlu is 26 years old. He's having a tremendous season. Yeah. He's the guy who's normally cited in, you know, back before the current ownership took over when the snake oil merchants were here. He's one of those guys who signed an enormous contract. And his contract's coming to an end. So they need to replace Çalhanoğlu or give him a new contract. And they need to decide what to do with Donnarumma as well.
Yeah.
Do I need to mention who looks after who Donnarumma's agent is?
Oh, we know.
The lovable Dutch-Italian, Mino Raiola. Robbo, I want to get your view on this, more from a technical perspective, because obviously Çalhanoğlu makes a lot of money. I think maybe you can persuade him to stay at a reasonable price and say, hey, Hakan, don't you want to be part of all this, especially because, you know, you can have another 4 or 5 years here and Ibra's going to go at some point, presumably, and, you know, you'll be one of the senior leaders. How difficult is it to replace somebody in Çalhanoğlu's position if they do let him go?
A year ago, I'd have said easy to replace. This season, I would say very difficult because he's been, I think, their outstanding player this season. He's found spaces in that number 10 role. He's drifted out into wide areas. In many of the games, he's been the tactical difference between the sides where he's found that space. And it's what he's done with that space. He's finding those forward passes. He's getting shots away. So to find a player who can do that is very difficult to play in that number 10 role.
I mean, they wanted Szoboszlai, right, from RB Salzburg.
Yeah.
So clearly Szoboszlai would have come in and they would have let Çalhanoğlu go. I don't think you can keep... There's no point keeping both, right?
From the Moneyball perspective they try to apply, that makes sense because Szoboszlai is younger. He has a bigger upside. Yeah. He makes less money. So, yeah, all makes sense.
So is there a question somewhere, and I ask you both the question, if people at Milan maybe wonder if Çalhanoğlu can keep this level for longer or this is just one of those seasons where...
You're playing for a new contract.
You play for a new contract, but everything goes... Just everything works for you. And then maybe at the club, they're not sure that he can be that consistent in the next season and the one after and the one after. Hence why they're looking at other options like Szoboszlai, like Florian Thauvin, who I think might end up coming different profile and different position. But, you know, do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very fair question. And the thing about Çalhanoğlu is what you need to look at is throughout his career, obviously everybody's known he's been really talented, but he has been up and down.
Yeah,
he's been inconsistent.
Sure.
It's often felt like a gamble giving him a big contract. You have to, and this is difficult. This is why, I mean, I wrote a whole piece about this. It's up on the website about, you know, sort of seven transfer principles, transfer and contract principles to apply as the market reopens. You have to get it right, and it's difficult to get it right. You have to if you believe that Çalhanoğlu can play at this level for the, you know, until he's 30, then you give him a new deal.
Yeah.
If you have doubts, then maybe you step back. And the difficulty also is Donnarumma. Robbo, you were never a goalkeeper, and my friend David Priest hates it when former pros go and critique goalkeepers because he says,
Hang on, let me just correct you there. I played twice in goal for Arsenal. Does that count as a goalkeeper?
That does count.
Well, when a guy got set off.
It doesn't matter. That's twice more than you.
30 minutes in two games and didn't let a goal in. So there we go. I can give a bit.
He's an authority on goalkeepers as well. Okay, here's the thing with Donnarumma, right? We're not going to debate that he's an exceptional keeper, maybe the best keeper in the world under the age of 23. But he's only 21 years old still.
He's played like 500 games already or something.
But he's on an enormous contract. I believe, figures might be a little out of date, I believe only David De Gea and Neuer make more money than Donnarumma already. And when you're approaching free agency and you get a new deal, you get a raise. Yeah. Everybody gets a raise, especially when your agent is Mino Raiola. If you're in Milan, do you say, look, there's no question here. We need to give him whatever he wants. Or do you say, look, we need to apply some logic here? And are you concerned that, you know, Mino Raiola might come in and say, all right, fine. You know, you give him a tiny raise, but then we put a release clause, for example, of 50 million or something low so that somebody else comes in and offers him the bank, he can go. Well, how do you approach this?
Well, I would say no player can you say, I'm going to give him everything to stay, because we've seen in the past it causes problems. I think they would like to keep or want to keep him for another couple of years. So the option that you
just mentioned...
Why
just a couple of years?
Well, because I don't think they'd be able to afford him for, unless they start winning the Serie A and start doing well in Europe, I don't think they'd be able to afford him for years to come. So maybe get another couple of years out of him and sell him at the highest price they possibly can and then improve their team.
But here's the thing, right? When we're talking about players like Donnarumma, there's only X number of teams in the world who can afford him, right? And you could argue...
Right now, who need?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Them,
so
who need
we can answer that, right?
Yeah.
So Bayern Munich, because they're already hooked up on Neuer for several years. And they've got your buddy Alexander Nubel waiting in the wings. Real Madrid are fine with Courtois.
Yeah.
Barcelona, I think, are more than fine with Ter Stegen. I don't believe he would go to Juventus or that Juventus could afford him. And they also have Chesney, who's fine.
You know,
nothing. That's certainly not an emergency situation. Manchester City seem happy with Ederson.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think, because Donnarumma is not exactly great with his feet, he wouldn't be a good fit there anyway.
Yeah.
Liverpool have a pretty good goalkeeper and a very handsome one. We have to mention that every time we bring up his name.
Man United are already in a bit of a tangle anyway, you know, with goalkeepers, so they're not going to add another one.
So,
and Chelsea have just bought one.
Chelsea just bought one. They already have a very expensive one on the bench.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain, I would think, have different priorities.
They have, and they're very happy with their goalkeeper, although he's getting older, so maybe that's what you mean. Maybe a year on or two, then more doors will open for Donnarumma, and if there's a release clause in that contract, then I think that would work for him and for whoever wants to buy him, but not for Milan.
Bear in mind that in a year or two, Atletico Madrid, who have a guy who for me is one of the top three keepers in the world, you know, at some point, if they need to, he'll come on the market as well, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I kind of feel, Robbo, that if you're Milan, you can kind of hardball a little bit here, no?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But you've got to remember, 2 years is a long time in football. Anything can happen with some of these goalkeepers. We were talking about De Gea maybe 4 years ago. He was the best in the world. He was Manchester United's player of the year 4 years on the trot, I think. And suddenly his form dips and we're saying that people should get rid of him. So 2 years is a long time in football. So if Milan can keep him for another 2 years, I'm sure then they'll have another rethink about it. But At the moment, they've got to keep him.
I think that you got to get creative. Look, I mean, you got to pay Mino, unfortunately. Yeah. But you got to, you know, there is a formula, whether it's bonuses or whatever, where you can also sit them and say, look, the market's changed, right? You got the stupidly big contract before because there were fools running the club.
Yeah.
Mirabelli and Fassone. Here, I'm happy to name you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is reality. And you know that if you go somewhere else, you can say free transfer or whatever, even if somebody gives you the money you want, there's a good chance that, you know, there'll be competition or whatever. There just aren't that many places for you.
Surely he must love Milan. I mean, you know, that club has done so much for him and for his brother. Let's not forget that.
And
the brother is always there around, you know, even if he's, you know, not the greatest, let's put it that way. So I really hope that there's also a sense in the Donnarumma family of like, okay, we owe Milan too, and that it would be nice not to just live like this on a free.
Robert, one last thing on Milan. Obviously, you've done them a lot. Project forward, right? If you were talking about where they can realistically upgrade, when I look at this team, Romagnoli, I kind of feel like when I started looking at it by position, right? We agree, assuming Donnarumma stays, the goalkeeper's fine.
Yeah.
The fullbacks, Calabria has been pretty good this year. They also have Kalulu, who's really a right back. Maybe central defense. I like Romagnoli. I know a lot of people don't. Kerr's been fine when he's played.
Gabbia's
done well.
Yeah.
In midfield, if you can get something, you know, Tonali, it's taking him a while. He's not starting, but
he will come good.
Tonali's going to come good. Other than the center forward position, and I don't want to say this too loudly in case Ibrahimovic hears me and says, what do you mean I can't play until I'm 45? They have a whole host of attacking wingers. Is there a point, though, with all these young wingers that they have, whether it's Salamaker, Brahim Diaz, Leao when he plays out there, where, you know, these guys are all promising, they're good, but then they may not go to the next level. But who do you like best out of the people they have in that winger position?
Well, if you heard my commentary last night, I was a bit disappointed in Salamaker, as I have been whenever I've seen him play. He does some decent things, and then his final pass hasn't been good enough.
I asked him who he likes, and he tells me who he doesn't like.
I'm going to tell you all the players. There's not one of those four players that play in the wide areas that you mentioned there that I would say are top-class players, and are going to be top-class players. Even if Leao plays out in a wide area, I don't think he's got lots of pace, but I don't think he's going to be consistent. I don't think he understands the role. He's not got a great game understanding. So if you're looking at a place where Milan have to improve, I think it's in the wide areas. Rebic does a good job playing from outside to in, supporting the main striker. He's played at centre forward himself. So Rebic is the best of them, but he's obviously much older. The young players, Diaz hasn't shown anything so far. Salamaker, I think, has been disappointed. And Castillejo is exactly the same. So that's the area Milan have to improve if they want to go on and win the title and do well in Europe.
And you don't even mention Jens Petter Hauge because of your well-known anti-Norwegian bias.
We know you don't like Norwegians.
I haven't seen enough of him. I've only seen him in the Europa League. I haven't seen enough of him. When he's come on as a sub, he's obviously come on late on in games, and maybe Milan are trying to hold on, or maybe they're trying to get back in the game. He looks a good player, but haven't seen enough of him to say, he's the next one.
At this moment in time, if you were scouting these guys, you wouldn't say any of these people can go to the next level where they become, you know, a legitimate, strong starter on a team capable of competing for the Champions League, for example. None of these guys have that level of upside.
And you were talking about Calhanoglu a little bit earlier. He's the one player that has made them tick, whether he's been in a wide area or he's played in the number 10 position. But those young players, I don't think there's one, apart from Helga, who may go on and be a good player, a top-class player. The others, I don't think so.
But when they signed Bennacer from Empoli, you didn't think Bennacer could have had that impact, right? Straight away.
I did, actually.
Did you? Okay, but it was still not that obvious. So I think maybe you give them a bit more time. And some of them, maybe not all of them, but some can develop a bit like in the Bennacer mode and become much better.
Predicting what young players are going to do is extremely, extremely difficult, right? And actually, Robert, I want to leave on this point, just speaking more generally. There's a game I like to play where I go to the Wikipedia page of the under-17 World Cup. Right?
Yeah, I love that.
I go back 10 years ago and I look and see like, oh, what teams
who made it, who didn't make it.
And you will see that even World Cup winning teams only have two or three guys who make it are playing top flight football. Maybe one guy's a superstar. The other guys are average players. It is really, really difficult. Remember Rion Brewster, right? Yeah. Look, maybe he'll still come around and make it, right? But we all assumed he was going to be the next Michael Owen, Ian
Solanke
Rush type.
As well.
And, you know, Solanke's another one, right? So, can you, I mean, you worked with young players when they were very young, and you worked with older players, and you were super talented. Again, people may not remember this, but you were a highly touted, highly talented
you were wonder
young
kids.
Player, right?
You were
a wunderkind yourself, right? Can you just talk a little bit about that, about the difficulty in predicting what will happen? You know, maybe give us some context about reminding people that players still need to grow up.
There's so many things that can go wrong from the age of 16 to 23 with a player's development. You know, if you look at this, there's injuries that can take place and they don't quite fulfill their potential. They move clubs and it's not quite the right club for them. The manager changes and doesn't like his personality. There's a million things that will stop players being fulfilling their potential. But there's always one, two, three who are the outstanding players that can overcome all that. And it's a very difficult thing to judge. You know, and I can only talk from my own experience. 16, 17, I was the England youth captain. I was the player everybody was talking about. I was going to get in the Arsenal team at the youngest ever a player had done, which was 17 and a month. And everything went well. I had no criticism till the age of 23 when George Graham took over. I was injured. He took over. He didn't like what he saw in the first four games. We had a row and I get transferred to West Ham on my own choice as well. And that affected my mental state for a little while because suddenly I've been half rejected for the first time ever. And that can happen to lots of young players. You know, they've got to choose the right club. They've got to choose the right manager. Managers can destroy them or make them. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong between the ages of 16 and the age of 23. And you see that with most players. Do you think, why didn't he quite make it? There's always a reason. Injury, manager not liking them, wrong club, they're not developing players. And that's where you mentioned, right, Rion Brewster and some of those young players that are at Liverpool and at Manchester City and Manchester United and Chelsea. They don't get the opportunities early enough. They get sent out on loan and nobody really trusts them. And they could be absolutely outstanding players, as we've seen with Alexander Arnold, who was given his chance, stayed in the team, and has gone from strength to strength.
Or Curtis Jones as well, I think you could mention at Liverpool. I mean, this is a really good point. And whenever people talk about clubs producing players, developing players, or even just signing young talent, you know, we often bring up the work that Leipzig have done and Borussia Dortmund have done. But go back, you can go to Transfermarkt, go back and look at all the players that Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund have signed that don't work out, right?
Yeah. There's loads as well.
It doesn't mean that they're bad, and I think they have the right strategy. They're saying, let's attract the talent, let's get the best we can, and let's accept the fact that, you know, more than half these people aren't going to work out. I think that's what Milan's trying to do. When they look at this core of wingers, they look at it and they say, all right, we don't expect them all to make the grade. We want one guy to become a superstar, a couple guys to be serviceable. Couple other guys we manage to sell because we get them young and they don't make a lot of money, and we can live with that. And I think that's the strategy. I mean, that's what they're trying to mimic. And I think we have to accept that. And this idea that you can just flip a switch, play your star guy from the under 17 in the first team and it's going to work out. Most of the time, it doesn't. Robbo, thank you so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure as always. And Merry Christmas to you both.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, we have the League Cup here in England, Arsenal against Manchester City. Now, contextualizing this, both managers made a bunch of changes. Yeah. We got to see Zach Steffen in goal for City. I think it's fair to say, especially in this fixture congested season, it's more a chance of trying things out, seeing things. I'm not surprised Manchester City won. They were the better team. Mikel Arteta obviously has other things on his mind, but what do you make of Martinelli?
I thought it was really good. Yeah, I thought it was a bright spot. We knew obviously what he was capable of after last season before the injury, where he was really good as an 18-year-old coming from Brazil with no experience in Europe before, and did really well when he played. Remember that goal he scored against Chelsea, for example, at Stamford Bridge, albeit with the help of the slip from N'Golo Kante. But I think there was a lot of good things. Then he got that injury, and I think he was keen to come back quickly, and so was Arteta, because he can definitely bring something a bit different than the usual players that you have up front for Arsenal, whether he's centrally or wide. And you saw that against City, up to the injury scare that he suffered when him and Steffen sort of collided. But he's fine now. He should be able to play on Boxing Day against Chelsea, whether from the start or coming off the bench, I don't know. But he is in a season where there hasn't been many bright spark from Arsenal. He's one of them, very positive. So let's hope he can bring something really good to that team that badly needs it.
From City's perspective, I'm not surprised in the semi-finals, given that they've won, the last three League Cups and five
of the
last seven.
They've lost two out of 22 or something. It's crazy.
Is there any logic as to why they do so well? I mean, I know, obviously, they're a good side, but it's... Do they have a better
bench? Do they take it more seriously? Or because the depth in the squad is so big that even when they rotate, it's still a hell of a team playing? I don't know.
Phil Foden scored a nice goal.
Yeah, he was good.
Obviously, by the way, no VAR, and that's a whole other conversation. But can we expect more time for Foden? Because I was thinking about this, and I thought, you know, you go back to the dominant City side, and it was De Bruyne and David Silva. Yeah. And I just kind of assume Bernardo Silva will ultimately, you know, develop into the big, you know, the role that his big brother held alongside De Bruyne.
Is he more Bernardo than Foden for you? That can.
Well, that's what I was thinking. But now I'm thinking, maybe it's not. Maybe it is Phil Foden. Maybe this is sort of the turning point where because Bernardo Silva's been up and down. Maybe Foden has that range of passing. Yeah. I think he has more of a physical presence as well than Bernardo has. Because I know we've seen him play two in front of the back four, Gundogan and Rodri, or Fernandinho and Rodri. But I like that 4-1-4-1.
I like it too.
It seems more Pep, you know?
Yeah, completely. The double pivot is not a Guardiola.
No. Final point on this. You mentioned Arsenal have a big game coming up against Chelsea. Do we have any news on Aubameyang or anything, or anybody to come back?
I think they make a late test on Aubameyang and his calf. I think, like I said, he scored against City, but I think he still can bring so much to your team. I'm amazed when he doesn't start. As we said, it was a tough defeat. I think Ronaldo in goal didn't help. But maybe Arteta can find some positive in the fighting back from 1-0 down early to come back at 1-1 at half-time and that kind of stuff. But that game is so important against Chelsea. Incredible. Almost a turning point in the season.
You say you're not it's so important. I my understanding and logic suggests that Mikel Arteta's job, regardless, doesn't depend on this.
No, it's safe. But turn that season around. I think they win that and then suddenly...
To get a jump start. Yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about.
The thing about Arteta, and obviously the pressure is big and it's very disappointing compared to where they were in August when they won the FA Cup and the Community Shield and all of that. And the drop from then into where they are now in December is huge in the space of 4 months. However, from the beginning, it's been very clear from the Kroenke family to the CEO at the club and people at the club that this was a long-term... Arteta is a long-term project. You can't appoint him like this in December, a year ago, and then sack him after a year because it's been a bit up and down and because so far the season is disappointing and you're 15th in the table. Do you agree with... Do you see what I mean? It's like, he's a young coach.
The other reason you can't sack him is that, you know, if you're a serious manager coming in, you're going to want to come in and be like, okay, well, what options do I have? What players do I like? What players do I not like? And when you come in, and I know I hate to go back to this, you see, oh, look, you've committed me through 2023 to Aubameyang.
Yeah.
You've committed me through 2023 to Willian. These are guys I can't sell because they make far too much money. Nobody's going to sign these guys.
Yeah, but he wanted them.
So, but I don't. No, but that's what I'm saying. Arteta wanted them. I'm saying some other dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, look, the fact if Arteta really did want them, I'm going to come out and just try and say it. I'm disappointed. I am disappointed that he had such a short term.
Yeah.
Because that means, look, I don't have a problem with bringing people in if you think that they're going to take you over the top. So if you look at this and you say, you know what, the distance between us and Liverpool and Manchester City isn't so big. So if we commit an enormous amount of money, and these are enormous amounts of money that they're committing to players with no resale value, right, to Aubameyang and Willian, to narrow the gap so that we can win or compete for the Champions League, generate all this revenue, and then we bring in other players, and then next year Ozil will be gone and Socrates will be gone, and you know we'll have more flexibility with our we'll have more flexibility with our wages as well.
Yeah,
that's fine. I would say if that's your logic, that's the framework, right? But I would also say then you're wrong. Because to believe that Arsenal, even by keeping these people, can instantly go and compete, which is the only reason for bringing these people in, is just wrong. It's an incorrect judgment, right? And that has to have consequences. And it's Arteta who has to pay for the consequences, right? Not the people who made the decisions.
Yeah. But I mean, he's a young manager, and you make mistakes. I mean, experienced managers make mistakes, so young managers will also make mistakes. This is all new, and I think the good start that he had, although even in the league, I mean, they overachieved, right, last season after he arrived. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Their expected goals were it was hard to sustain that kind of form with what they were producing on the pitch. So there was always going to be a dip at some point, not as deep as this one, for sure, but you could have predicted it a little bit as well, right? You agree?
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you add established players to the group, though, they're going to make you better, and they're very expensive. The question is this the best thing to do when, in 2 years' time, you're going to have to replace all these people?
No, I know, but okay. But then you added Thomas Partey, for example. Whether you're a fan or not, but the guy's been, you know, injured.
He's
that's nobody's
injured,
fault, you know. And so if on top of... You know, already the structure of your squad and the issues that you have with Mesut Ozil and people like that and Socrates and the one that you don't play and Saliba, which was signed under the previous manager. And obviously Arteta doesn't think he's ready to play or didn't think he was ready to play at the start of the season. If on top of that, you've got the injury that you have, you've got the players that you should rely on, like Willian, like Aubameyang, not in good form, not scoring, not playing as well as they should be, you know, suddenly this is what created the situation that we have now. And that's why I just think the game against Chelsea on Boxing Day, which is typical, like, okay, home game with no fans, but this is one where something has to happen. You have to make it happen. Even if it's a scrappy 1-0 win, then suddenly you can build on that and take that positivity going forward.
What do you think is going to happen with Saliba in January? I mean, are they going to register him for the Premier League? Because When I look at sort of the core defenders, Mustafi's been linked with a move to Barcelona, no less.
I love that.
Barcelona need bodies, right?
They need bodies.
I'll say this, you know, Barcelona at the back, we're talking Mingueza and Araujo, so...
Yeah, you know. And you and I are free as well if they want us.
Yeah, but look, you if know, you get Mustafi do the show for nothing,
yeah.
I, as you know, I'm a big Socrates fan, but given the guy hasn't been allowed to kick a ball because... By the way, it's a stupid rule. Okay, I get it. Premier League is squad limits. They don't include him. Yeah. Whatever. They tried to move him. They couldn't. But he can't even play in the League Cup?
No, I think it's the same squad. Yeah. I think
how stupid is that?
I mean, you're going to have a squad for like the League Cup and then one for the FA Cup and one for the League and one for Europe, one for the, you know,
in a congested season.
I know.
The League Cup, you should allow, if a player's registered and he's under contract, you can play him. I mean, that's really silly.
Yeah. I think Saliba probably, it's more likely that he will go on loan, maybe back to Saint-Etienne or maybe stay in England somewhere to get that experience. It's been frustrating for him, of course, as you would think. He's a young player who really wanted to play. They just thought he wasn't ready at the start of the season. I don't know. I'm a bit surprised because I think he's an incredible talent, but yeah, he arrived on the back of a long injury with Liga season stopping in March, so very very short of game time and rhythm and all of this. I get it, but I still think he's potentially the best defence centre back in terms of talent. He's so talented. He's he has a huge future ahead of him. And I think it's a shame the situation is what it is with him.
Well, time will tell the way this goes. Final thought on City. They can get back in the title hunt.
They need a Aguero back, though. I love Gabriel Jesus, and I think he's a really good kid, but I just can't see...
That he fit Aguero.
Yeah. I don't think Jesus can take them to the top playing up front. So it's either you get Aguero back for the end of the season, and then you know who you're going for. Erling.
Brown.
Haaland. That's what you're going for.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, more than enough Arsenal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
All right, well, Paris Saint-Germain go, and they win despite 10 players out, 4-0. But, hey, look, there's the Grinch that steals Christmas. Leonardo, reliable reports, I think it's pretty much confirmed now, say that Thomas Tuchel has been sacked.
Gone.
Jules, over to you.
Listen, we had heard, sources at the club saying in the last few days, we'll have meetings, we will discuss your future. Not because the results were bad. They're in the last 16 of the Champions League. They're third in the league. Okay, that's...
Could be fourth.
They're usually first, but it's only 1 point behind Lyon and Lille. So, but more because I think the tensions with Leonardo were still an issue between Tuchel and Leonardo. Let's not forget that Tuchel was not chosen by Leonardo. It was chosen by Antero Henrique, who was there before Leo came back to the club. The fact that they were not playing well. This was not a team that you enjoyed watching.
Harder to play well when you've got half a dozen guys.
I know, but there's no playing style, Gab. You don't see where there's no identity to that team. And yeah, they had big results. You know, winning at Old Trafford was good. It could have gone the other way, but they still won, and they deserve credit for that. There's been some good moments, good periods, but nothing consistent. There's just not enough that you could see the performances.
You got to the Champions League final in August.
Yeah, and that's great, but that was in August. That was last season. This season is different. And also, I think that because he has 6 months left on his contract...
That's the big one. They didn't extend his contract. There's a lame duck ethos around the club. You have big egos there. And I think I'm going to float this. I think they probably feel that it's going to be easier to retain some of their stars or at least have a plan for the future if they already know who's going to come in.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? 100%. With that in mind, what's the thinking? Because
it's
obviously...
The return of the captain, Mauricio Pochettino, who obviously used to be a PSG player, PSG captain, who did really well for the club, who loves the city, who loves the club, and same does his family, will come back. That's what we're being told this morning, which is a bit...
So you're being told officially?
Yeah.
Or?
Well, not officially yet, but
that's the rumor,
the club.
Right?
Yeah, sources at the club.
There's a big sigh of relief around Old Trafford,
Yeah, no, but it was, listen, I think it was Allegri or Poch, pretty much. I think that's what Leonardo had in mind a long time ago. For the summer, for now, I think Poch, because he speaks the language, because he's been there before at the club again, I think maybe for the style of football, if you compare it with Allegri, maybe it makes more sense for Leonardo. And I think Nasser El Khelaifi, who in the end, the chairman and very close to the owner in Qatar, decided that Poch was maybe more suited to PSG than Allegri.
I would also throw in perhaps that if they do have to work on a budget and experience cutbacks, I think
Poch has
certainly
been there before.
Poch has been there before. He's more used to working in those circumstances. Do we think the announcement's going to come soon, or do we think there might be a transition period, an interim boss?
No,
maybe
I think
my man, former Italy international Thiago Motta. No,
no, I don't think Thiago Motta might be in the staff, but I think he'll be poached, announced quite soon, depending on when you're listening or watching, and then he'll be ready for January the 6th when they come back from the winter break. Ronald Koeman pulls the back three out of the hat for Christmas, and Barca win 3-1 away at Valladolid. Gab, is this the way to go without Griezmann and Coutinho?
If they play better, sure. I thought they played right.
I thought they played okay. Yeah, they played good.
No, they played well because, you know, it gives Pedri and Messi a lot of license. You can, you know, you've got players in midfield who can pass the ball. It's the magic box. But the problem with Barcelona playing back three is that to play a back three, you need probably five competent central defenders in your squad.
Yeah.
They only have three right now. And, you know, as to whether Mingueza and Araujo are competent long-term, I think that's all TBD. Yeah, you can drop De Jong into the back three, but then you've got a hole in midfield. So I don't think this is a long-term solution. It's a solution we might see in certain games. I don't have a problem with leaving out Griezmann in certain games. In fact, I'll go further and say Griezmann plays center forward in this formation. He might even be more effective.
Yeah.
However, let's not get carried away. It's nice to know that Koeman is thinking of different solutions, and it's another win for them, which is important.
Yeah, and the bromance between Pedri and Messi is quite amazing to watch in a game like this, how they find each other.
It's reminiscent of Messi and Ronaldinho,
I think so.
A late Edinson Cavani masterpiece sends Manchester United on their way against Everton. Jules, I know you want to celebrate your boy. Do you have some love for Ole too?
Why?
Okay, there we go.
It's a good win. It was not a great game. It was not a great performance, but his goal is fantastic. The way he controls it first time and then shoot with his left foot is amazing. I mean, as you know, I love Cavani. But yeah, this is good. And Martial's goal as well. Lovely finish.
Horrible game, though.
Yeah, not great. Spurs beat Stoke 3-1 in the other quarterfinal and also advanced to the semifinal, where they will play the mighty Brentford, who beat Newcastle. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
But Gab, Jose Mourinho called that Dele Alli. That was punchy for his reaction to getting substituted. Can you understand this? I mean, Dele wasn't good.
No, he wasn't good. I think there's a pattern with him. Remember, we saw a little bit of this with Luke Shaw, where like he kind of chooses one guy to be his whipping boy. Look, you have to put your face in Mourinho that he knows that, if I go and I treat this guy like rubbish, this will motivate him to play well.
Okay,
right?
So that's for a reaction.
I'm assuming he's doing it for that reason. I'm also assuming he's doing it for self-harm or to annoy Levy.
No, I know, but he's done it before and there was no reaction, so.
It's a longer term. Like, he got the reaction from with your boy Ndombele, right?
True, that's true.
So,
that's true.
Who knows? It's not going to work with Danny Rose, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Fiorentina beat Juventus 3-0 on Tuesday night. Jules, Juve went a man down after 10 minutes. Bonucci had a stinker and Nedved tantrumed over some officiating decisions, but they were terrible, weren't they?
They were bad. They were really bad. Cuadrado being sent off so early in the game didn't help, of course. But even before that, I thought they were bad. And after that, they were bad. Franck Ribéry, I thought, was amazing. At 37, what? What are you looking at?
It's all about Vlahovic's amazing goal, and you go on about Franck Ribéry.
Yeah, but who gave the ball to Vlahovic? Who gave the ball?
Who finished?
Great ball.
Whatever.
Great ball. Franck, you know I love you. And really good, but Juve, disappointing. I was really expecting better from them. Juventus Day had gotten worse before that, to be fair, before kickoff, after the Tribunal of Italian Olympic Committee overruled the decision made previously that awarded them with a 3-0 win against Napoli. Remember when Napoli didn't travel to Turin for the league game? That was a bad day.
It was a bad day. It's a good day for Napoli because they get a chance to go and get the 3 points.
Yeah.
And
the right decision?
The points. I have no idea. There's two sets of rules. There's medical rules. There's footballing protocols. There's the FA, which rules one way, and there's the Olympic Committee, which rules another way. This is confusing, and this is stupid, one way or the other. I hope if they can overrule this, I hope they give Roma their point back for which they lost because of an administrative error in registering a player. Real Madrid make it 6 wins in a row, beating Granada 2-0. How about that?
Yeah, it was quite tough, though. They didn't play well. They had no Modric, who was rested. And without Modric,
they said,
great header by Casemiro. Good
Asensio,
to see Marco Asensio.
The back heel, your techers.
Love that on the post. If you haven't seen it, it's a back heel volley from the cross, from the right side. It's an amazing moment of genius and quick thinking. But they were not great. But hey, they're not great, they win. That's the only thing that matters. Atletico Madrid beat Real Sociedad away 2-0. But there's bad news coming from England, as the FA bans Kieran Trippier for 10 weeks and he applies worldwide, so he could miss up to 13 games. He can still appeal.
He can appeal. Yeah, I don't think he's going to win it. I mean, this has to do with his transfer. This is with the sort of illegal betting that he made, which you're not allowed to do when supposedly you have information about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's a blow. It's a serious blow for Atletico Madrid because they don't have a lot of alternatives
Versaico,
on the right.
I guess is the only one. Herrera can play there, maybe.
Versaico is not an alternative, believe you me. Sticking with Ligue 1, Lyon and Lille are ahead of Paris Saint-Germain. Marseille could be too if they win their games in hand. Jules, of those three, who do you fear most?
I think it has to be Lyon because they don't play in Europe to start with, unlike Lille and PSG. I don't think Marseille can go all the way, but Lyon looking good. That 4-3-3 worked so well. Awar last night was incredible. And that KTM from three, Toko Ekambi, Kadewere, and Memphis is fantastic too. If Memphis leaves in January, which is a possibility, then it might be a different story. But right now, they look really strong. Inter remain a single point behind Milan as they beat Verona 2-1. Gab is 7 wins in a row now for Antonio Conte. They're for real, aren't they?
Yeah, they keep suggesting that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, they're going to win now because it's time to prepare. Look, I tell you, this is a different Inter. This is an Inter which sits back, plays on the counter. He played Perisic with Lautaro Martinez. I don't know. Maybe it'll work. We've been there before, but I don't think it's a step forward.
And Beppe Marotta confirmed that Christian Eriksen, it's the end. It's over.
Doesn't have the functionality to play in this Inter team.
What does that mean? What? He's not clever enough?
It means he doesn't work for Conte, basically. I want to take a step back here, though, and make this really, really clear. Because people are already spinning here. Oh, great. Look, Inter can sell. They can sell Eriksen. They paid $25 million for him. They'll get $20 million for him, maybe more. And then they can go and buy this guy. No. This is really bad. This is really bad, and this is on Conte.
You mean bad management?
Well, it was a bad decision, obviously, with hindsight. I think it made sense with a different manager, but obviously this guy, he knows Eriksen inside out. He coached against Eriksen. We've seen Eriksen. Eriksen is not a mystery. First of all, you had 6 months to go, and you still spent, on his contract with Spurs, you still spent $25 million on him, which is a lot of money for a guy his age. You then give him an enormous contract. You know, I don't want to bring up amortization and accounting and blah, 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 but you will take a loss on him one way or another.
Yeah.
And you're assuming somebody's going to give you money for him. The only thing that's going to give you money for him is somebody desperate who needs an instant impact attacking midfielder and who thinks it's Eriksen. There have been rumors of a swap, Eriksen for Van de Beek. I mean, I don't think that's realistic or going to happen.
I'm not sure either.
What are United going to do with him?
But he's going to be linked with every single club in the whole world now, right? Arsenal and United and PSG.
He will be. He's a very good player. Hopefully he'll be motivated. But this goes down as a big L for Inter and for Conte at a time when they're still really stretched financially. Oh, and I might add, as you may have noticed, they're not playing European football.
Yeah.
So that is extra Champions League income, Europa League income that they will not be getting. So this idea that some people are floating out there that all of a sudden, oh, look, you're going to get money back for him and Conte, you know. Oh, by the way, there's nothing Conte said. Like, oh, well, we might want to do stuff in January, but it's up to the club. I need to meet with him. This usual whinging, I need more signings. Enough. Enough. Work with what you have.
Which is already pretty good already.
Yeah, which is a week to prepare every single game. Enough. Move on.
Yeah.
Marcus Thuram has been banned for 5 games for spitting at Hoffenheim's Stefan Posch. Is that fair to you, Jules?
I don't know. Angel Di Maria had 4 games. And
it's 5 games plus another game suspended.
Suspended and heavy fine as well.
In case he starts spitting again?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's a lot of games. Yeah, it could have been worse. Yeah, of course, he could have got 8 games. Maybe even more in Germany. We've seen it before. I don't know. I'm just too disappointed by his attitude. And his father, Lilian, spoke this week as well by saying, I was really cross with him, but it's out of character. You know, he didn't really mean it. I don't want to find him excuses. He's a young player.
He apologized. He apologized to Posch.
Let's try to move on. But yeah, they would miss him massively. Yeah. They would miss him.
It's what you call a teachable moment.
Yeah. Napoli need an injury time winner from Lorenzo Insigne, and what a goal, by the way, to avoid defeat against last place Torino. Yeah, I just remind you, Gab, you said they were title contenders and still are your favorite to win Serie A this season. You said it earlier. I'm gonna make you repeat it.
I think they're in the mix. I think they are still in the mix. Now, obviously, if they win the head-to-head against Juve, which they still
it's
have
a
to
big
play,
if.
It's a big if, but they're playing right now. you know, again, without Mertens, without Osimhen, Chucky Lozano was on the bench because he's not fit either, without Koulibaly in this game. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're down a lot of players. When these guys come back, they're really good. And also, I kind of take it as read that Milan and Inter and other teams are going to drop points because it's a difficult season. But I don't know. All I wanted to say was
it would
show Napoli and Roma, who are third in the table, some respect because there's a long season ahead. And what we're learning in the Premier League as well, where you've got teams like Leicester and Southampton, Everton in fourth place, is that, you know what? This season's really hard to predict.
You know, the Lakers won the NBA title the season when Kobe passed away. Imagine if Napoli wins Serie A on the season. So not the same year, technically, but the season where Diego passed away.
And they do it at the Diego Armando Maradona.
Oh, my God, that would be amazing.
By the way, on Maradona, I was going to put this in, but it's been overlooked.
Yes.
Did the toxicology report revealing that there were no drugs.
No alcohol.
There was no alcohol in his system. I think some people who spread rumors should, you know, deserve a swift kick up the backside.
Definitely.
Bayer Leverkusen 17-year-old wunderkind Florian Wirtz has signed a one-year extension through 2023. Jules, what does this say to you? It's basically a big for sale sign.
I knew you were going to say that. It might not be. He's only 17.
He signed in 2022. They go, oh, let's just give him an extra year in case he turns out to be bad. No.
But they sat down with his
agent and they said, hey, look, Mr. Agent, how about you give us an extra year to preserve his value, to let him grow? And agent says yes.
That's the cynical in you. It's also a pay rise. You can reassess the situation in a year time if
keep giving him 1 year contract.
Maybe that time it could be longer. I don't know. Yeah. I don't want them to lose Havertz at 20 and Wirtz at 19 or something like that. I want them to keep him. He's been great for them. But you're right. Maybe it's just a way of.
I agree with you. This is the negotiation, which is why he got the 1 year.
But maybe it's just they hope to get 80 million in 2 years' time from Bayern, and it might well happen. Rob Dawson spoke exclusively with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The interview is up on the ESPN website. He said that Pogba's attitude is very, very good in training. That he loves football. That he's ambitious. Gab, is he being truthful?
I'm not at United's training, but. You know, and it was just funny seeing. I mean, by the way, it's a great interview from Rob. Great,
It's really good.
It was fun to see the reaction to it because you have all these people like, "Oh, Ole's just saying that because you know he wants to get a big fee for Pogba." Ole has said this from day one, right?
Yeah, and I can tell you, it's true anyway.
I don't know. So either Ole's just been lying all along. And all his friends and ex-teammates who go and routinely crucify Pogba week in, week out, they just ignore what their old friend and teammate Solskjaer says because they also, I guess, believe he's a liar. Or he's saying the truth. And look, there's no issue with his attitude. But he's not performing the level he wants to. He doesn't fit into Solskjaer's plans for whatever reason. He has 18 months left on his contract. And therefore, if they don't want to lose him on a free, and they don't want to give him a new contract because they've not offered him a new contract, the guy wants to leave because it's good for United if he leaves because they'll get some money back rather than getting no money back. To me, this is so simple. It's so simple. And the way that they've personalized this, and by the way, can we be clear on one thing with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Unlike some previous Manchester United managers, who I won't name, but who might be from Setúbal.
Yeah, from Portugal.
He doesn't go out and have pops at Pogba privately with friends on the press. I will go out on a limb and say, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't ringing up Roy Keane and says, like, I bet you Roy Keane hasn't even given him his number because, you know, he doesn't want to be reached. But and say, oh, by the way, you know, I said Pogba was going to actually go out and slaughter him, Roy. You know, he doesn't do stuff like this.
No.
Right?
No.
So, I don't know.
And if you watched United's last, three games? Two games? Don't tell me that Paul Pogba is not a hell of a football player.
Oh, and but of he doesn't course, track back.
Bruno Fernandes, you know, he's Bruno Fernandes, and you also have Rashford and Martial and this and that, but Paul Pogba is a hell of a player for that team.
Both things can be true. He can be a good player and a good person and not be a good fit for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Manchester United.
Totally.
Guess who's back? Back again. Raymond Dominic. He's going to be taking over Nantes. Jules, my first reaction mirrored the thoughts of a former Nantes manager, Claudio Ranieri, which you kindly shared with the world on Twitter.
Yeah, Claudio Ranieri, who was when he was appointed at Nantes in 2017, was above the age limit that you could coach in France. He had a derogation to be able to. And Raymond Domenech, who was and still is, by the way, the head of the manager union in France, was not happy, criticized Ranieri many times. And then Ranieri had this amazing line in French talking about Domenech, who, as you know, loves his theater and is a bit of an actor. And Ranieri said, if he wants to talk to me, that is Domenech, if he wants to talk to me about theater, then I can listen. But if he wants to talk to me about football, never, never I will listen to him. He says, like, jamais.
Jamais.
And so brilliant. And I'm like him. I don't want Domenech on a bench in Ligue 1. I mean, he's 69 next month in January. So, by the way, he's also above the age limit. So he will need to give himself a derogation to be able to go there. Listen, the last time he managed at club level was 1993. By the way, Zinedine Zidane scored in his last club game when he was the Lyon manager.
This is back
Bordeaux.
When Zidane had big hair.
Exactly. And then obviously there was 2010 with the French national team, the humiliation in South Africa, the disgrace, the shame, the players on the strike because of him. And now he's back. I mean, come on, right. This is ridiculous. The non-fans are disgusted.
I want Sky to hire Patrice Evra, send him in the front row of Raymond Dominic's first press conference and just harass him.
West Bromwich Albion appoint big Sam Allardyce and Schalke will reportedly call in Christian Gross. Gab, relegation strugglers all over Europe are going old school.
They are. Christian Gross. The whole safe pair of hands. Look, I want to say this about Christian Gross, right? I know, like, we live in London, and because he managed Spurs like 20 years ago, because he showed up and he came on the tube and he held up his tube ticket. You know, by the way, youngsters, tube tickets are these paper things that people used to get.
You put in the machine.
But before they had phones. Anyway, Christian Gross went on to manage Basel and did really, really well. In the last few years, he's been off in the Gulf, and I think he was in Egypt as well. Yeah.
It's still a strange court. Come on. A team that hasn't won in a year, it's a strange court.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I don't know, but... Yeah.
All right. That brings us to an end. But we don't take holidays, right?
No,
we're going to be back on Monday. Jules, until then, we wish you all happy holidays.
Joyeux Noël.
Whichever ones you celebrate. Yeah. Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.